It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. All this hour, we are talking about the Trump administration's attempt to freeze federal grants and loans from going out, a move that caused mass confusion among government officials, hospital administrators, and nonprofit leaders. It's been blocked in court, and the administration has pulled back the memo that started this, but there are still questions about what could have happened and whether something like this could happen again. The effects on Illinois would have been significant, as Governor J.B. Pritzker said Tuesday.
When does this affect people? Well, every day we access the Medicaid system to get reimbursed for people's services that they get from their doctors. Every day. $104 million is what we would have gotten today had we been able to access it on time.
A bit later, we'll hear from organizations across the state about how it has affected them. But we turn now to some experts to help us make more sense of this. David Merriman is the James J. Stuckel Presidential Professor in the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois Chicago. He's also co-lead of the Fiscal and Economic Policy Working Group at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, a think tank spanning all three campuses of the U of I. David, welcome back to the show.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you.
And Alicia Uribe McGuire is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Alicia, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you have questions about everything that's happened, you can join the conversation at 800-222-9455. All right, David, I'm going to start with you. We've had this vocabulary word added to the national discourse this week, impoundment. What is that? How does that fit into what the administration was trying to do here?
Well, impoundment's a process where the president refuses to spend some of the money that Congress has appropriated for a particular program. And there's a long battle between the Congress and the president over to what extent the president can do this and, you know, what power Congress has to force him to spend money that they've appropriated.
And I don't know if you can speak to why it's unconstitutional. You mentioned this long history. There was a law passed in 1979. The Supreme Court has considered this. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's a bit of a gray area because, of course, I mean, the constitutional basic setup is that the Congress makes the laws and appropriates money for the budget, and then the president's job is to administer it. But of course, there's some gray area in, like, well, what if things change and it doesn't make sense to spend the money? If there's, for instance, a natural disaster that prevents the money from being spent, or all kinds of things you can imagine that would make it not possible to roll out the plan exactly as Congress had planned. So the presidents have always had some ability to slow spending, rearrange spending, move it from program to program. And sometimes Congress will put that in the legislation. But presidents sometimes, for policy reasons, don't want to do what Congress told them to do. And that a particular issue that really came to a head was under President Nixon, where there were a bunch of grant programs that Nixon thought should be folded into a block grant, and Congress hadn't authorized that. So President Nixon just kind of decided he wasn't going to spend the money. There was a big battle. It went to the Supreme Court, which basically sided with Congress. And after that, Congress passed the Budget Impoundment and Control Act in 1974, which set up a procedure for when Congress could tell the president that he had to spend money that they had authorized. There's still a lot of battle. There's some question about whether that law is really constitutional or whether the current Supreme Court would uphold that law. But the current situation is, in most situations, the president has to spend the money that Congress authorized, although there's some leeway for that within that the president can. There's a little bit of gray air.
Yeah. And of course, the Supreme Court can change its mind, as we've seen in recent years. Alicia Uribe McGuire, let me bring you into the conversation. There was so much confusion around this memo between the memo itself, statements from the administration, what organizations and state governments experienced, even beyond the questionable constitutionality of this, how does all this confusion affect this budget freeze's viability as actual policy?
I mean, I think that there's, at the end of the day, we're dealing with administrative agencies that respond to and work for the president. And so if they're being told not to spend the money, if they're not being told not to distribute the money, whatever else, at the end of the day, it's their jobs on the line if they don't follow what the president is telling them to do. And so regardless of what is allowed and what is possible, it's what the president can get away with a lot of times. And for the people that are, it's their job to administer and it's their job to carry out what the president's wishes are, it's hard for them to not do it. And then for people that were, counting on funds that were there, obviously this has greater effects, greater implications, particularly because the only way to challenge what a president does is to take it to court, and courts are slow. So, particularly when it comes to something like Medicaid that has more immediate effects, this is potentially problematic.
David, let's talk about that. So how much of, Alicia mentioned Medicaid there, how much of Illinois' budget is based on federal funds like this? And can you talk just about,
About a third of the state's revenue, at least in 2024, came through federal funds. The biggest chunk of that was Medicaid, which is about $20 billion a year. I'm talking about the all funds budget. It's a little over $100 billion a year. About $20 billion of that came from Medicaid. About another $10 million was for transportation. And then a couple of more billion was for various other things. So altogether, it's roughly a third of all the revenue that the state spends.
And it's not necessarily that all that revenue would have necessarily entirely gone away, but how dramatic an effect would it be if even some of that money was cut off?
It's enormously dramatic. Medicaid is obviously the biggest chunk, and that is, as you've said before, really important state program. Many of the other grants are in all sorts of funnel their way through all sorts of state operations. I should say, the biggest chunk of money that comes in from the federal government to the state is, direct aid to individuals like Social Security and Medicaid and other things. The grants to state are really important to the state.
Alicia, let me ask you about there was some reporting from The Atlantic that the order did not go through the usual White House vetting process. There's been this back and forth. The Trump administration rescinded the memo Wednesday morning, but then the press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, went on Twitter Wednesday afternoon and said this is not a rescission of the federal funding freeze. It's simply a rescission of the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget memo. Why? To end any confusion created by the court's injunction. The president's executive orders on federal funding remain in full force and effect and will be rigorously implemented. What do you make of that and the communication that we've had on this policies?
I think it comes down again to the person that is giving the directive and the people that are carrying it out. So the people that are carrying it out make the rescission, and they call back the memo that essentially put the freeze on it. And I think to say that this is to clear up any confusion, but to also say that it didn't happen only adds to the confusion. It's a little bit hard to really make sense of what that response from the press secretary means. But yes, it's essentially, you have people who are trying to follow the directives of the person in charge, but also who are trying to take care of whatever the legal ramifications of it are as well. And so I think that it's, we've got different people in different positions who are making these discussions. And so yes, the president can put out the executive order and say, you know, these funds are frozen, but if OMB isn't following up on that and isn't actually carrying it out, then it's just an order that has no force.
David, the state does have a rainy day fund. I checked this morning. The balance was a little more than $2.2 billion. Not a lot in the grand scheme of state finances. As you mentioned, the overall budget's about $100 billion. So, you know, recessions and pandemics are one thing. How can the state plan for and prepare for, if it can, for, you know, finding out with a day's notice that federal government funding is going to be cut off or at least put on hold?
Yeah, no, the changes in federal grants would dwarf anything the state has the power to overcome very, very quickly. So, you know, I don't know what the plans would be if, say, Medicaid were greatly scaled down. You know, that's something you'd have to take up with the governor's office, but I think it would be very, very difficult, and there would be drastic cutbacks in services. I want to add just one other point, and this is also relevant to what Alicia says, is that the confusion itself is harmful to the state, because there are many, you know, contractors, state contractors, and if they can't plan, they can't be confident that they're going to get the revenue they need, they can't do hiring, they can't make commitments on their own, they can't do the expansions they might have been thinking about. And that hampers state provision of services and very likely leads to inefficiencies too. So just the confusion is already a lot of damage, even if the funding is there.
We had a couple of comments from listeners that are I think I can tie these together. All right. One was an email from somebody going by Ginger who said, did the order from the Supreme Court releasing Trump from accountability keep anything from happening to him no matter what he does? And of course, that I think this email correspondent is referring to the order about immunity with regard to official acts, criminal immunity. But then we also got a text message from Aaron in Springfield who said, this is absolutely not reasonable because the purpose and mechanisms of these programs are determined by law and Congress. The Trump administration's agenda has no bearing on how or if the money is obligated outside very specific conditions and processes. This is a blatant violation of the law and one that Trump was already impeached for in his previous term when he tried to withhold funding from Ukraine. Aaron goes on to talk about part of his job is working with grants and contracts that do rely on federal funding, and says they've been scrambling to push money out the door because of the uncertainty. But Alicia, let me ask you about that sort of bigger picture question here and accountability. And, you know, the idea inherent in the structure of our government that there's going to be competition for power to hold the other branches to account. How do you see that playing out this year where we haven't seen a lot of pushback from Congress, at least not yet?
Yeah, I mean, there's the immunity case is an interesting one. And so one of the things I teach constitutional law. And so one of the things that I teach my students is, you know, when the president is in office, there's really not a lot that can be done to him, even for criminal acts, because the people that would charge the president with criminal acts report to the president. they're the Department of Justice, the people that serve under the president, and so it's unlikely you would ever see anything. And so really, what the Trump versus United States case did is actually to further immunize the presidents once they're out of office, because that decision basically said that any action that was taken while president cannot be pursued, even once they're no longer in charge of the Department of Justice that would be coming after them. And so, you know, in terms of what can be done then, when you have a president who is doing things that perhaps could be perceived as criminal or could be perceived as, you know, certainly defying the law to some extent, is you have to rely on the other branches to rein that person in. And we're currently in a setting where we have an almost perfect alignment of both houses of Congress, the Supreme Court, and the president. And so the likelihood that we see anything come of that is not very high. I wouldn't expect to see too much pushback from Congress as a whole. That's not to say that individual members of Congress might not try calling out things that are happening, but I don't think the numbers are there to really have the accountability that we might want.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe if there's some change in the midterm elections. David, just about a minute left. Talk to me about planning for this. I mentioned the rainy day fund, but you know, you're used to working with Illinois people, thinking about budgetary stuff and planning for recessions and other things like that. How do we account for this with already what's projected to be a budget deficit heading into the next fiscal year?
Yeah, I don't honestly, I don't believe that we can develop a plan that'll deal with all contingencies here. The amount of money is just too big, and the potential changes in policy are too big. What you could do, I suppose, it's like if you're a household and you think there's going to be a big recession and you're going to lose your jobs, you're potentially going to lose your jobs, you know, you start to put a little bit more away. And then if it happens, you're going to have to, you're going to have to really cut back on spending. And I think that's really all the state can do. It could be a bit more conservative about its spending. Maybe that's part of the whoosh of the Trump administration. But the scale is just too large. The potential scale is just too large. So I think probably using legal mechanisms to fight any kind of rescissions that aren't legal. And then on the political.
Yeah. I'm afraid we are pretty much out of time. So we're going to have to leave it there. David Merriman, Alicia Uribe McGuire, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be right back after a short break. It's the 21st Show.